You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 20th, 2024, and 12 years on, we're still on the journey.
I'm George Alborth.
My name is Scott Juster.
This is Here's But Not Humorless Conversation About Video Games. One of the oldies we go back to every year, a ritual experience for us, is our playthrough of Journey from That Game Company. We are 12 years on. Is that it?
12 years, yeah. March 13th, 2012. So we played it last week.
Were we doing the podcast at this point?
Oh, yeah.
I think we
We definitely were.
Holy cow. You can listen to us, our very first thoughts, and then listen to this episode, because we're going to talk about what the experience was like this year.
It would back be in. So funny if we went back and we're like, this game sucks.
This game blows.
There's no aim down sights.
I hate sand. It gets everywhere.
It's coarse.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. I think we loved it at the time.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's where we play it. But yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about that experience. You know, every year it's a different thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's different things to ponder. I mean, in many ways, I think one of the reasons it sticks with me is that the yearly playthrough is almost like a year-end resolution moment, right? Like, it is a meditative moment where you can spend a couple hours and just think about, at least I do often, is just think about the year, like what's changed in my life.
Yep.
And how I kind of position that within the story that is the tapestry of my full life lived, right? Like, when I am dead and gone and I've lived my X number of years, you know, what are those moments that are going to be part of the story? Which is, I think, beautifully written in the text of the game with the story that they tell sort of in the form of tapestries as well. So I've got a lot of thoughts. It was another unique experience for me. Where do you want to start?
I thought a lot about, for whatever reason, this year, I thought a lot about the time of year, kind of similar to you.
Mm-hmm.
I like the New Year's resolution thing, because, I mean, whatever, the calendar is an arbitrary thing that humans, you know, the Gregorian calendar is just kind of an arbitrary thing that we all decided to standardize on, but, like, we talk about, like, you know, New Year's resolutions or whatever, but like where we live, it's still like the dead of winter in New Year's. Mm-hmm. Like the season hasn't turned over yet. And it's only like, really for us, it's like in March is when it actually, to me, starts feeling like a new year. You know, for us, it's like, when Passover starts to roll around or Easter or whatever, like it really actually does feel like a new year because it's actually spring at that point. And it just so happens that that's when we replay Journey. So I was thinking a lot about the actual seasons and how I associate this game with that. I was like, oh, now the year feels new again.
Yeah. Like the spring is here.
Yeah.
There's a rebirth, a la Journey rebirth that you see in the world. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That's neat.
Yeah. And so I was just thinking about that time, I associate video games with the winter a lot because, you know, again, like that's usually when, you know, as a kid, you'd score a couple games around the holidays. And, you know, as an adult, you have a little bit more time off of work or whatever. And you know, that's generally when I do a lot of game playing. But then there's always this tent pole of the year where it's like, oh, yeah, this month or this week specifically, I'm going to play this game that I always play around this time of year. And it's associated more with an actual like, oh, yeah, like this actually is game of the year is obviously the end of a year and the beginning of a new thing. But this truly does feel like the new year in my video game.
Yeah.
In my video game playing.
Yeah, or the capstone to the year that's gone by.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the transition point, you know?
It's cool that we can demarcate the year by the Journey playthrough. Let us say from now on, that is New Year, and it is year 12. We're in the year 12.
The return of AJ after AJ, Journey.
Yes, after Journey, after Journey release.
I'm gonna start signing off all my like correspondence and everything. Just I'm gonna this is where it starts.
Okay, some things that I caught this time around that I thought was kind of interesting. Purely mechanically or narratively speaking, I suppose, I don't think I fully understood that the characters in the game, they sort of power their stuff, you know, with their souls. I don't know if this maybe this is just a new reading or a reading that like I hadn't considered in a while.
So funny. I have some of this exact same shit written down in my notes. Like both you. Okay, keep going though.
Yeah. So because there's a couple of scenes where they're like, they show the souls coming out and then they sort of replace the crops. Like the souls make the crops and then those are replaced by these like pylons.
Yes.
Which I, for the first time I saw as like power sources, you know?
Yeah.
And the little light inside them mirror the light that each of the individual characters have. There's also like trains that carry that same light. Like, so I really got the sense that for the first, maybe for the first time or the first time in a long while, there was a kind of like environmental story here, you know,
where they
are literally using the souls of these creatures to power the world towards this sort of destructive state. I was just surprised that like 12 years in, I'm just now getting that, you know? It's cool. And I think it's relevant too that, you know, the world is all sandy and it's beautiful. And I think sometimes while playing through Journey, I get drawn in by the beauty that the sort of sand world represents and don't quite reflect on how it can also be seen as a wasteland a la Mad Max, right? Like something that has been tarnished, that wasn't always this way, which is true, like within the text, right? Like they show crops and then the crops are gone.
Exactly.
And sand sort of builds up and takes over. So I think, and on one hand, yes, it represents sort of the flow of time and, you know, the whole like monument in the desert, apocryphal story. But I think it resonated with me this time in a different way. Maybe climate change had something to do with that. I don't know.
I mean, it's funny. Like we've been, I guess as a human race, we've been, well, the people that have been paying attention have been kind of grappling with climate change for a long time. But like, over the past 12 years, even the mainstream populace has had to deal with climate change in a more immediate sense. I mean, you can't insure a home in Florida anymore because of all of the weather and the flooding and stuff like that. And
like, the fact that you live in Florida with all the other Florida people.
I mean, it's just like you are seeing the, you know, the kind of consequences of that stuff in a way that's more day to day. And so I think that is probably more top of mind for us, but I thought the exact same thing. For whatever reason, it really struck me that the energy was more pervasive through their entire society than it was just like, hey, this is just a standalone source of energy. Where it's like, oh no, this is actually kind of a thread that runs through the entire world and environment. They're part of it too. So is their technology, and all of a sudden they over-index and basically expend and exploit it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
That was interesting.
It adds this added tragedy that I was reflecting on as well, in the sense that, you know, even the, well, on one hand, the sort of carpet creatures that you see, the sort of fish creatures, I started wondering, like, are these just sort of the souls of other characters that are embodying these? And then more significantly, the monsters for sure are, right? Like those are powered automatons, like these golems that are flying around and are instruments of war, but they seem to be powered by the souls of the creatures themselves.
Yeah.
And they're kind of stuck there, right? Like in a way they are trapped individuals who cannot make that journey. I don't know. It's just, it was a cool thing to think about that I was surprised I'd never thought about before.
It's so weird that it kind of struck both of us independent because we didn't talk about this at all before it. The other thing that stuck out at me, kind of in a similar vein, but there was one, you know, the little reliefs that you can expose and you see the like single frame pictures. There was one that I interpreted differently this year where it's a line. It's like a line of the elders or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's one elder inside one of the big kind of like what you go through when you're going up the big tower inside, like when you're mm-hmm. going through like the water, you know, the temple basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second, like, is that big temple and that big pillar in the middle of it basically a like ascension point, like a suicide point basically? I always kind of looked at it as like a, you know, like a temple. But then when I looked at the diorama, like the relief of it, I was like, oh, wait a second. This is a line of people all waiting to get into this tunnel. And the person in the tunnel is just lying there. And then there's like a glyph that's going up the tunnel basically. And so it's like, it's less that kind of dark, but I was like, hey man, this seems to be telling a story of a society that not just kind of ruined itself, but actually realized it and then left. They were like, hey, this is it. And so we might as well just ascend now because we've already gone past the point of no return. And now we'll just transcend to the next stage or whatever. And I was like, man, like that, I don't know if that's true or not or whatever, but like the evidence points, there's definitely an interpretation to be had based off of some of the pictograms that, you know, you can find in that area.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if there's like clues in the score, you know what I mean? Like the names of the songs and stuff could be pointing in that direction. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. That's a cool idea. And that's also such like a critical moment in your own journey, right? Like that's the moment where you realize what it's going to take to move forward, right? I think this is the moment where they show you get to this tower and then your long ass trek and collapsing before you move on. So, you know, maybe even there's kind of like a nod to this being that juncture point.
It's like, this is like, what's ahead. Cause that's the first, you're right. That's the first point where they show you the future instead of just the past. And so it's like, oh, they could see their future and they chose, well, our society is gone, so we're just going to end it now and like move on to the next thing. I also was thinking about that same thing about the guardians that were still there because again, all of the pictures show them leaving and then there's a picture of just the guardians there after they're gone. And so it's like, oh wow, they like created these weapons that will now outlive them, you know, like they couldn't even do anything with these weapons. These weapons are now just kind of like trapped here in perpetuity, you know?
Yeah. I recently read a book series. It's a couple of books by this author, Becky Chambers. She wrote A Psalm for the Wild Built and its sequel. And those books are interesting because they are utopias. So it's not a dystopian novel. It is a utopian one in the sense, you know, it takes place, I think, after mankind had some kind of disaster, but we figured our shit out, right? Like, we're all socialists and we, you know, there's no money and we barter. Like, it's very, you know, it is optimistic in the sense that we have, like, figured it out.
Yeah.
But the way that they think about the artifacts that they left behind is really interesting. Like the whole book is essentially just kind of like a philosophical discussion about your place in the world and your place within the environment. And there's this sense that like the things that we leave behind, like the architecture we leave behind in particular, that could mean very different things to people depending on what the world looks like, right? And in the context of something like Journey, you know, like it's interesting that as you first start playing through the game, you see these ruins and they are architectural wonders or like awe-inspiring in a way.
Yeah.
And it isn't until you start to look a little bit closer that you understand the context of like, per your point, maybe this tower is actually like a tower of giving up or suicide, you know, or, you know, these ruins were actually the engines that built the war machines or, you know, some of the things that you find in the very first level could be interpreted as the sort of body parts of some of the war machines. And you don't understand that at first, right? Like you're just freeing all these cool little sort of ribbon fish that are flying around and stuff. But I think understanding it for like both the beauty and the sort of tragic left behinds of your society is an interesting one. There is a long-term thinking that I think both that novel series and Journey kind of helps you reflect on. And it's super valuable, right? Like it's something that you and I've talked about many times, both on and off the podcast in terms of the way that our society is structured or not structured to think about really long-term stuff, right? Not just, and when I say long-term, not even, you know, 50 years, but 150 years, 300 years, exactly. thousands of years, right? Yeah. Like, that stuff is kind of fascinating. The Long Now Foundation is, I think, an SF-based organization that does like work on that exact subject, right? Like trying to wrap your head around the challenges that face the species as a whole in the long run, you know, makes you really think outside the box a little bit, because you have to, right? You sort of start to see yourself from this third person perspective. And I think the experience of playing Journey does that, right? Because the character is also doing that, right? Like they're seeing themselves within the overall story. That you learn your place within that arc, right? Like you both are of and not of these elders and the history that comes from them, right? And so there are aspects of the story where you could interpret the climb and the sacrifice to be a form of penance to the sins that these people have done. Yeah. Or you could see it as a form of rebirth, right? There's an opportunity there to both look at it optimistically and pessimistically. And it's good that it walks that line, because that is kind of the challenge that we face whenever we're thinking about our place within the world, right? Like the good and the ill and being both. That duality, I think, is super interesting. And I think Journey does a really good job of exploring it.
I was thinking about the whether or not it's like a literal, it's supposed to be taken literally or not, but at the end of the game, when you are blasting through and kind of through to the summit of the mountain, and you're blasting past the two guardians that have been kind of stalking you the whole game, and then you come out and there's like two of the whales that come out with you.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, like I just never noticed that it was like two for two. And it's like, you know, not only is it just kind of a nice like visual thing, but it's like, oh, I wonder if the people took their inspiration from the natural world and then created like war machines in their image, or maybe just like perverted the whales into war machines, you know.
That's a good point. Yeah. Like the whales are inside the war machines.
Exactly. Yeah. Or at least fashioned after them or something, you know, cause they move very similarly, you know, just in a more mechanized, you know, malicious way. But then when you come out to the other side at the summit, you see the natural version of them. And again, whether they're literal whales or not, but the juxtaposition of what the natural world turned into versus where the inspiration was drawn from struck me this year.
Yeah, that's super cool. One thing I really liked this year, this was the first year where I played with my daughter on my lap. She's going to turn 3 soon. And she's old enough to sort of like watch, right? And ask questions and like engage with it, which was super cool. And there were some parts where she was just like climbing on me and like putting her butt in my face and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was neat because, you know, she wanted me, she was asking who the elder was, right? And asking me to like tell this thing. And specifically whenever the elder was showing the past, I was like, oh, he's showing me like the story of these people. And then she was like, you tell me the story. And so every time the elder came up, she asked me to sort of recount. And it was an interesting experience to take what is a purely visual experience and make it auditory, right? Like I was being like, once upon a time, these people did this thing, you know, they made these flying monsters and they decided it was, you know, bad, or yada, yada, yada. But like, it felt almost more like a form of oral tradition that you would actually see in the stories we tell about ourselves over time. Like that is what would persevere, you know, in the game. They don't want to use any dialogue. And so everything is communicated basically telepathically, but in a much more kind of anthropological or human way, the idea of sort of telling that story is a cool one, you know what I mean? And then at the end, she asked me to tell the story again. And instead I asked her, like, well, why don't you tell the story? And she came upstairs and like told Nicole, and she was like, oh, the Elder's Game. And then like, he fell down, but they picked him up again at the end. And then he shot off into space. And like, it was cool to see her take this experience that she had watching this and make it into a story that you could easily see, you know, 100 years, Game of Telephone becomes a legend, right? Like it becomes mythos. It's really neat to just watch, because that is the kind of milieu that I think Journey is partaking in, right? Which is myth making in a way.
Yeah. I mean, it's also just like, I gotta believe that's one of the reasons why, I mean, it's one of the reasons why we get something slightly different from it every year, but specifically this year, like when you're talking to someone who not only has never seen the game before, but has only seen the world for less than 3 years, like you're going to start interpreting things differently, you know?
100%, like, yeah. Have your kids watched you play it before?
No, I didn't get a chance to do it this year. I had to do it late at night, but after hearing you talk about it, I think I'll definitely do it next year.
Yeah,
because they're certainly really old enough to like, you know, they know it. They know the basic structure of a story, so like it'll be interesting to see what they and they know. The weird thing is that they know enough about video games now that I can say with certainty that this will be like no video game they've ever played. You know, because they played things like, you know, Captain Toad and Mario Kart and, you know, like very, very gamey games. Whereas this is like much more of a, you know, this is a different form of video game that they haven't been exposed to, which will be cool to do.
I wonder if they would want to engage in that way. And then also if they do, like, I bet each of them would have kind of their own interpretations or feelings, you know? Like, one of the reasons I played with my daughter at all was because earlier that same day, I was listening to the Journey soundtrack, and there was a part that was scary. And, and she wanted me to turn it off. And I was explaining to her, like, you know, sometimes music can make you feel certain things, like being scared. And then I skipped ahead and played a different part of the Journey soundtrack, and I asked her, like, well, how does this make you feel? And we started having a conversation about and playing different music. Like, we were playing the Stardew Valley soundtrack. And I was like, you know, how does this make you feel? And she's like, this makes me feel like I want to climb a tree. And I'm like, that was so good. Like, that's musical education right there.
Well, also, whoever is the composer of that would be so happy to hear that.
Yeah, like, it was so cool. Yeah, I mean, no doubt. The Stardew Valley soundtrack is very, very good. But she was like, yeah, it makes me want to climb a tree and play with my friends. And I'm like, this is... And what's so funny is it perfectly fit, right? But again, like, the idea that I thought was interesting was I was challenging her at a very young age to consider how something could make you feel and then try to put words to it, you know? And it is the exercise that we all do when we play something like Journey. And so I wanted her to be there. And when that the scary music scene came back and some of the lighted music came back, you know, I talked to her about it and I was like, hey, do you remember this? This is what we're listening to. Like, how does this make you feel now with the visuals on the thing, you know? She was just said like good or something like that, but it was a, it was a cool exercise, at least for me.
I mean, it's neat because, I don't know, like you think about it differently when you have kids, but like for us, this game was, I mean, video games are many things and there's like many peaks and there's no one right way to like appreciate a video game or there's no one correct genre to be like, this is the video. Like, I think Journey is one of the most beautiful video games ever created. I also think Spelunky is one of the most beautiful video games ever created, you know, for like very different reasons. But like for us, Journey was, I feel like, was very much a like, we can show this to a normie and they could now understand why we think games are beautiful. Whereas if I showed a normie Spelunky, they'd be like, what are you talking about? I'd be like, well, let me talk to you about the mechanics of this, blah, blah, blah. You know,
or like Balatro, where I'm like, oh, there's cards with, you can make a glass card.
I mean, it's just like, there's something, I think, and I think it's because of both the visuals and the storytelling style taps into other, it's kind of like when you watch the beginning of a movie like WALL-E or something, where it's like, oh, this is some art, you know, like this is like, I understand this. Whereas you, it's a little bit harder to understand the art of a video game like Spelunky because the art is in the system. You can't see it. You have to feel it. And like Journey, it's both. And so like it draws you in a little bit. And, but like for our kids, they're kind of existing in a world where that those peaks have already been established. And so they kind of get to just like skim from game to game where it's like, you know, I can't wait to play Hades with my kids for a similar reason. But like, I also am very excited about showing them all of the That Game Company games because it just is like totally opposite directions of why video games are great.
Yeah. Yeah. You should show them Flower. That feels like age appropriate, right?
I think so too. And yeah. And it's like, even the spooky parts of Flower are over faster and are like a little bit less scary. So like, I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Interesting. Another note this year. So if you recall last year when I joined, someone showed me in the snow level how to clip through the geometry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So same thing happened this year. So I went in as a white cloak, but they clipped through multiple different scenes. So in the very first level, they clipped through the geometry. Crazy. And I was sort of walking them through the experience. And then later on in a level, they did the same thing. I ended up losing them probably about halfway through, right before the water tower sequence, because Atsi needed to go poop. And so I had to like go to the bathroom and like help her out. And I came back and the person was gone. But
they'll go meditate in a different way.
Yeah. It was interesting though, because part of me was sort of rebelling against the breaking of the geometry stuff. Cause like I had seen it, I got it right. And Atsi was there and I think it was a little bit less exciting, right? Like she didn't see the sequence of the, you know, being chased by the big monsters, which maybe was for the better considering her fear of the music and stuff. But it was, there's a part of me that just like, I just want to have this pure experience. Please don't try to get me to break through the geometry.
We don't need to speed run.
it's interesting to me, you know, I think when I'm approaching it every year, because I'm approaching it as a ritual, there's a sort of sanctity to that experience.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe the reason other people are playing it are different, right? Like they don't see it as a ritual. They just see it as like, oh, I'm going to go back to this game when people are playing it and just have fun. And I think you can marvel at and still be meditative on the opposite side of the wall. In fact, it's a very different opportunity, right? Because it is devoid of anything. Like there's no monsters there. Like you just hear music and it's just a very long, like upward hill climb to get up to some of that terrain. Yeah. But on the other hand, it's still not like that same sort of narrative. And
exactly.
I think part of it is I went in wearing the white robe, and when you wear a white robe, you will only match with other. Well, no, I guess you can. I think you're more likely to match with other white robe players. You're less likely to match.
Interesting. I don't know the logic of it.
I think you can only match with someone who's also beaten the game. I want to say.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because I don't think that. There's some mechanic that separates a little bit the red robes and the white robes. I think it's that if you're wearing white, you cannot encounter someone who's on their first run. Whereas if you're wearing red, you can.
That's interesting. Yeah.
For whatever reason, they made that decision. So, I think next year I'll probably wear red robes because I ultimately don't want that experience. But it's interesting just to see like who is still out there playing this game and why are they doing it. But did you encounter anybody on your run?
Oh, I did not. And I feel it's because I wasn't able to do it on the literal anniversary date. Because again, you know, children. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if, maybe some people are still there over the week or whatever, you know, like if I could pick it up again. Totally solitary. Like even at the end of the game, there was nothing, no names, no nothing. And that was probably the first time in a long time that I had played through that game fully solitary. There's plenty of times where you meet someone for like one level and then they're gone. And so that was also a different experience where it was just, and I kind of knew that going in where I was like, it's probably pretty unlikely that someone's going to do that, the day after or 2 days after or whenever I played it. But it made it a different experience because I kind of expected and then was alone. And so I was just kind of like wandering around the levels on my own and like not feeling any particular pressure one way or the other if there was like a companion. So it was that also made it a slightly different experience than it usually is.
Yeah, for sure. Before we wrap, I realized that Journey was on Steam. And I wanted to read some Steam reviews. Can I?
Oh, my God.
I'm going to read some good ones first, and then I'll read the negative ones. So Steam it's overwhelmingly positive.
I have not seen this, but I got to believe it's overwhelmingly positive.
But there's like 1,200 negative reviews or so.
Oh, my God. Does it say how many total reviews it's gotten?
Yes. I'll read that in a sec when I go back. Okay. I'm on the sort of good page. I just want to read some highlights. My companion drew a penis in the snow and I laughed really hard. 10 out of 10. made me realize how dirty my screen is. That's a good one.
That's good.
Yeah. Maybe the real journey was the friends we made along the way.
Ah, there you go. Wisdom right there.
Okay, let me find some of the negative reviews and get your like hot take.
I really do want, I really do hope it's like no progression, no XP system. to which I would say, au contraire, mon frère, if you look at my cloak, it is much more progressed than yours.
Yeah. So there are 25,155 reviews, and about 1,200 of those.
12,000, you said?
25,000 total reviews.
25,000. Oh, wow.
Yeah, geez. And about 1,200 negative ones. So a lot of positivity. You'll be glad that the highest negative review is clearly someone who actually likes the game, because it reads, stop looking at negative reviews and buy the game already.
That's so funny.
Very good, very good. Probably one of the most meh walking sims I've played so far. It looks and sounds pretty, but it's just boring as shit.
Walking sim.
It's a walking sim. Great, great. Let's see. Journey, there's some tech issues probably for some people, audio issues. Boring as hell, says the Godfather. this might be an excellent game, but I bought it to play with my friend. You can only play with random strangers. I wish that was displayed on the store page.
That's so funny. They got burned. They didn't know they were getting a Strand game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe Strand needs to be on the box now, you know?
I know. They put it in the Strand category on Steam.
Yeah. Movement is fun when it works, but most of the time I was just walking around slowly. I mean, you know, they're not wrong. It's interesting to me, though, like the reviews that call out co-op, you know, like, I want to play with my friend, or like the co-op didn't work for me. Like,
yes.
It's interesting because there isn't a warning, right?
Yeah.
So in a way, like, they're not wrong if the co-op didn't work for them. You know, if they like bumped into one stranger and like they just didn't get it, I guess. But
right.
At the same time, it feels like it would be such a spoiler to be really specific of like, hey, you might meet someone. Maybe you won't. Maybe you will.
Right. Right.
You know? One review I read thought that the entire game, that the other person was just really good AI, which I thought was very funny as well.
That's so funny. Oh, yeah. Man.
We're in a world. Anyway, those are some negative reviews. They're good. Check them out.
It's just, I mean, like, you mentioned this the other day when we were talking, where we're kind of in this, you know, we're still kind of in this golden age of multiplayer games, especially kind of non-traditional asynchronous, or, you know, we joke about the Strand game stuff, but like we really are in a world where that stuff has probably never been stronger. But that stuff still kind of it's more upfront about what it is, where Journey is actually hyper understated. Like, it doesn't tell you anything that's gonna, so it's even funnier to think about that in the context of 2012, when that was an even weirder idea. Like, Journey's approach is a much more, I mean, I suppose it's probably largely responsible for some of that stuff, but like thinking about it thinking about it in today's context, but 12 years ago, it stands out even more as a strange approach to take, you know?
Yeah. I read a review, a negative review, that was saying they didn't like the game because there were so few actions you can take. Like, you know, you can chirp, you can climb, you can fly.
Right.
which is so funny. Like, just the idea that, like, there's a minimum number of affordances I must have in order to experience something.
Right.
And my one thought was, like, this guy doesn't go to museums. You know what I mean? Like, because there's a degree of, like, you know, when I was younger, you'd see, like, a Jackson Pollock or something. You'd be like, my fucking kid can paint that. Like, this isn't interesting to me. Right? Like, and then as you mature, right, you start to understand, well, there is a context in which that art is put out into the world.
Exactly.
So there's the political and art context, which maybe you won't get if you don't understand the history. But even beyond that, right there, or like a Rothko painting, there are feelings that it can invoke just by looking at it, if you're willing to sit with the piece of art. Now, I'm not saying everyone is great and, you know, I hang them in my walls. Not that I could afford a original, but I am at a point, I think, in my life where I, in a way that I wasn't when I was quite young, like in high school, where the idea of sitting down and just looking at a blue canvas for 15 minutes sounds pretty fucking nice. You know what I mean?
I know. It's so funny.
And there's no action. You know, there's no action. There's no interaction. It's not,
right.
There's not like a lot to like be, you know, in depth and look into. It doesn't even have the sort of Van Gogh, well, if I get really close, I get to see the paint. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. Yeah.
Just stand back and sit with something for a while. And I think in many ways, Journey asks you to do that. If you are coming at it from a sort of modern day video game perspective.
Yeah, that is very true. That's there's definitely like an age dynamic at play as well. I think that's spot on.
They should put it in Steam reviews, like sort by age. You know,
yeah, exactly.
If you're Gen Z, let me filter your negative reviews out of this thing.
It should prompt people to like, hey, re-review this in 10 years and see how, like, play it again.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually. I'd be really curious if anybody hated it and then played it again and loved it.
Yeah. All right. I think we'll leave it there for this year. We'll be back same time, same place next year. Same game, mm-hmm. too. And who knows what sort of interpretations we'll have.
Yeah, exactly. Or will Journey reveal itself to be Frog Fractions 4 in waiting?
Oh my god. I have to modify my Steam review.
Yeah, you never know.
ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. Climb a mountain with us. Go on a journey with us through old podcast episodes. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, leave us a review, tell a friend, play some Journey.
All right, everyone. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.
Every time